Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And we are in the midst, or maybe we'll finish today, but you know, we're with Paul. We've been diving into these conversations, and welcome back, Paul. I don't want to keep you out remember we used to keep people in a sound booth and then they'd bring them out onto the show. Anyway, some of the old 70s types of shows and so forth, but welcome back. And when we were going into break, or actually ending the show, I was kind of pointing out, you know, how Britain used the type of tactics that they used in coming in here and basically buying out and corrupting the men that would be basically supported. And so what they had to do is they actually had to corrupt people that were in the public eye that they wanted to elevate into Congress so that they could get Congress to pass this Organic Act. And so that also happened, I believe, with London and or when the king broke away from the Catholic Church so that he could have his divorce, because at that point in time, I believe it was after the Armada. I mean, I'd have to check the timeline, but Britain was a rising power. And the Catholic Church wasn't about to lose, you know, their control over the earth, or I should say, you know, they wanted to maintain some level of control. And it's okay to have an actor, you know, suffer the slings and arrows and take all the abuse to do your bidding. Because people learn that sometimes, you know, having the power. As a matter of fact, I saw a really powerful photo, and some people may have seen this on social media, that points out that why is it that we've seen heads of states and we've seen, you know, the monarchs. Charles had a black eye. There's people that have had, you know, basically had unexplainable black eyes. And the reason why is because these people had to be reminded that they weren't in control. And so it's very interesting, when we start going down deep into the rocks and the crevices of where evil really lurks, you know, how this is all happening. But I don't believe that the empire, the Catholic Empire, you know, just rolled over. The Roman Empire just rolled over. And I believe that, you know, they infiltrated and they had basically co-opted England because if you notice and if you do the research, you will find that there is a treaty, an agreement between America, Britain, and the Vatican. And there's a flag that flies in all three cities. And so, you know, oh, it's a coincidence and it's excused in certain ways. But I'm here to tell you, when it comes to power and the lust, desire, and addiction, you know, that it basically gets a hold of somebody when they obtain that power, there's just no way they want to let that go. It perverts their soul when you have that kind of power. And so I don't want to kind of, you know, belabor this whole point because I really don't want to go down because I don't want this show to be talking about and exposing the conspiracies. But these men, when they were going through the ratification debates, they were talking about powers. They were talking about, you know, working together, checks and balances. What they were trying to do was they were trying to create a system, and this system actually can prevail. This system actually has, because the only person who knew what we would need to deal with the evil that we would have to face, I always say this, when you look at how we can actually, if we start demanding that every public servant, and remove them, we just snap our fingers, sorry, you're gone, you're out, the next, and we get the next person in. every person that goes into office will be watched. And this goes back to this whole thing that, you know, do we need to have a camera on a person to that extent, or do we need to actually just hold them fully accountable that we do not allow them to do anything, spending money on anything that is unconstitutional? In other words, the Constitution allows us to lock them down by using the oath, because no longer are you immune to the consequences of what you do when you're in office because of the 14th Amendment with Section 3. Now, I keep on saying this, and I keep on pointing to the 14th Amendment. You know, do you really believe that, you know, why is it that people have been told the evil of the 14th Amendment? Do you think that that is the work of the Lord? Or do you think that that this disinformation that's going in and permeating every walk of life from the conservatives and the conservative Christians? There's, oh, that's, you know, we got to get rid of that amendment. That's the one that's got to go. I mean, you even hear this in the citizen, sovereign citizen movement and everything else, how they besmirch the 14th Amendment. And I'm going, that to me, it only helps provide the evidence of how the 14th Amendment did come from the divine hand of Congress, or not divine hand of providence, forgive me. And it's the same thing with the Constitution, how we were given that, but those men weren't ready at that point to create that. You know, they just felt that the oath was sufficient enough. And so they couldn't fathom. They couldn't fathom the corruption that was coming. These men didn't know. Actually, I can't say that they, well, they didn't know, because that book by Robinson, didn't come out until 1796. So the Illuminati didn't form until 1776. So it took a while for people to start realizing what was going on. And so anyway, I digress. We need to get back into the ratification base. We might actually be able to finish them today, but we do have Paul with us. And Paul, are you ready to kind of pick up where we left off?
Yeah, we were talking about religious tests. What paragraph did I leave?
You finished the first paragraph. You finished the first paragraph, and I highlighted the first part of that paragraph, the first two-thirds of that paragraph, because a lot of people talk about the importance of creating a Christian state. And I think here's a Christian reverend at this point in time who understood why we cannot allow religious tests. And so when we look at what the Democrats have done by creating this godless, you know, church, the secular godless church in America, and now we see, you know, Senator Feinstein, who's no longer able to serve right now because of her health. And, you know, I look at her and I go, somebody must have tore up her Dorian Gray photo or painting. But and that's a sub reference to the story of Dorian Gray. If you're not aware, I won't go down the rat hole. But bottom line is, I look at, you know, how she and many others, but she was one of the best of using religious tests, because I see you're a Catholic and Catholics are against this and blah, 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 blah. And she says, you know, and she attacked these people because of their religious associations. That in itself was a religious test. And they got away with it. Oh, well, we're talking about the problem of religion, and we're just, but it's not a religion. Actually, it is. It's a godless test against Christianity.
She has never she has never communicated in her role as a senator with a potential Supreme Court justice without invoking a religious test.
That's right. Especially when it came to a conservative. Now, when it came to progressives, it was just, you know, oh, kissy kissy, hug hug, you know, and we got to vote for this person now. Let's not even talk about it.
Yeah, I meant to specify conservatives.
Yeah, sure. No, I think even the listeners understood that. Go ahead and start with the second one, because now they're talking about the importation of slaves.
Okay.
There we go.
Much, sir, has been said about the importation of slaves into this country. I believe that, according to my capacity, no man abhors that wicked practice more than I do. I would gladly make use of all lawful means towards the abolishing of slavery in all parts of the land. But let us consider where we are and what we are doing. In the Articles of Confederation, no provision was made to hinder the importation of slaves into any of these states. But a door is now open hereafter to do it. And each state is at liberty now to abolish slavery as soon as they please. And let us remember our former connection with Great Britain, from whom many in our land think we ought not to have revolted. How did they carry on the slave trade? I know that the Bishop of Gloucester, in an annual sermon in London in February 1776, endeavored to justify their tyrannical claims of power over us by causing the reproach of the slave trade upon the Americans. Excuse me, by casting the reproach of the slave trade upon the Americans. But at the close of the war, the Bishop of Chester, in an annual sermon in February 1783, ingeniously owned that their nation is the most deeply involved in the guilt of that trade of any nation in the world, and also that they have treated their slaves in the West Indies worse than the French or Spaniards have done theirs. Thus, slavery grows more and more odious throughout the world, and as an honorable gentleman said some days ago, though we cannot say that slavery is struck with an apoplexy, yet we may hope it will die with a consumption. And a main sorcerer of that iniquity hath been an abuse of the covenant of circumcision, which gave the seed of Abraham to destroy the inhabitants of Canaan and to take their houses, vineyards, and all their estates as their own, and also to buy and hold others as servants. And as Christian privileges are greater than those of the Hebrews were, many have imagined that they have a right to seize upon the lands of the heathen and to destroy or enslave them as far as they could extend their power. I'm stopping for a minute because this conversation is a little shocking to me. Let me back up a minute.
No problem. Uh-huh. I figured you would have stopped a few sentences ago, like two or three sentences in, but go ahead.
Okay. So let's see here. Slavery grows more and more odious about the. Let's back up. So I had always been under the impression that Great Britain had gotten rid of slavery quite a bit before we did, but somehow they used it in America.
They were running the slave trade. That's what he just said.
Okay.
They were the greatest benefactors of actually controlling the slave trade. Okay,
and
so
Dan, go ahead.
So what I think would be best, just as kind of try to focus to end this, I honestly would like you to, sit down after we're done with today's show, go through these parts, just highlight these into a different color for yourself, come back to these and go, oh my gosh, boom, 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 and write out these points and comments. So before we go into the next state, that we can actually address all of these points, because I think that would be the best way to do that, because we can dedicate a whole show of analyzing some of the, the insights that these men are giving us. Again, the Massachusetts debates really take a very spiritual view of the Constitution, where we're not going to get that out of the rest of the states.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there's a lot of things that we really want to discuss into further detail, but let's kind of read through this. And then in our next, because I think we might actually be able to, let me see, we got this one, two, three. There's three more areas that we have to read. So we can always come back to it if we finish today, but I honestly think that our next show will probably be consumed with this discussion.
All right, I agree, GR.
Okay.
I see things that questions are starting to explode in my head.
Sure.
So what I'm going to do is, like you said, I'm going to read through it, but then I'm going to come back to this.
Just highlight it as you go. If it's something that you want to, just use your cursors. You're writing through it and already have your selection color. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this. That way, while you're reading, you're highlighting as you go.
Right.
Okay. Just a minute. And I suggest this for you folks. When you're reading these things, highlight them. And then, you know, make an indent, make a point. That's why I use navigations, so I can actually use a header, you know, whether it be a 1, 2, or 3 or what have you, to say, this is an important point I really want to come back to so that I can dive into this. Because this is how I've been able to extrapolate out of the ratification debates all of these things that you need to understand, you need to hear, because these men are telling you like it is. Okay. All right.
All right, so I'm going to back up a little bit. I'm going to start back here. But all ought to remember that.
Okay.
When God promised the land of Canaan to Abraham and his seed, he let him know that they were not to take possession of that land until the iniquity of the Amorites was full. And then they did it under the immediate direction of heaven, and they were as real executors of the judgment of God upon those heathens as any person ever was an executor of a criminal justly condemned. And in doing it, they were not allowed to invade the lands of the Edomites, who sprang from Esau, who was not only of the seed of Abraham, but was born at the same birth with Israel, and yet they were not of that church. Neither were Israel allowed to invade the lands of the Moabites, or the children of Ammon, who were of the seed of Lot. And no officer in Israel had any legislative power but such as were immediately inspired. Even David, the man of God's own heart, had no legislative power, but only as he was inspired from above. And he is expressly called a prophet in the New Testament. And we are to remember that Abraham and his seed for 400 years had no warrant to admit any stranger into that church but by buying of him as a servant with money. And it was a great privilege to be bought and adopted into a religious family for 7 years and then to have their freedom. And that covenant was expressly repealed in various parts of the New Testament, and particularly in the first epistle to the Corinthians, where it is said, "You are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." And again, circumcision, quote, "Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing but keeping of the commandments of God. Ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men," end quote. Thus, the gospel sets all men upon a level, very contrary to the declaration of an honorable gentleman in this house that, quote, "the Bible was contrived for the advantage of a particular order of men," end quote. Ooh. Okay. Another great advantage, sir, in the Constitution before us is it's excluding all titles of nobility or hereditary succession of power, which hath been a main engine of tyranny in foreign countries. But the American Revolution was built upon the principle that all men were born with an equal right to liberty and property, and that officers have no right to any power but what is fairly given them by the consent of the people. And in the Constitution now proposed to us, a power is reserved to the people constitutionally to reduce every officer again to a private station. And what a guard is this against their invasion of others' rights or abusing of their power. Such a door is now open for the establishment of righteous government and for securing equal liberty as never was before opened to any people upon earth. Wow.
Okay, so again, this is, you know, we're now in the point where we're really seeing these spiritual views and they're really letting it out. And so delegated powers and abuses, this comes under another Reverend Stillman. And so Now we have another reverend speaking up, and let's see what he says regarding delegated powers and abuses.
Okay. "The powers that are granted to Congress by this instrument are great and extensive, but, sir, they are defined and limited, and in my judgment, sufficiently checked, which I shall prove before I sit down. These powers have been the subject of long and ingenious debate, but the arguments that have been made use of against delegating these powers to the general government prove too much being applicable to all delegated power. I mean the possible abuse of it. The very term government implies a supreme controlling power somewhere, a power to coerce, whenever coercion shall be necessary, of which necessity government must be the judge. This is admitted. If so, the power may be abused. Every gentleman must confess that we cannot give a power to do good, but it may be abused to do evil. If a merchant commits the care of a ship and cargo to the master, he may dispose of both and appropriate the money to his own use. If we raise a body of men and put arms in our hands for our defense, they may turn them against us and destroy us. All these things prove, however, that in order to guard as much as possible against the abuse of those powers we delegate to government, there ought to be sufficient checks on them. Every precaution should be used to secure the liberties of the people on the one hand, and not render government inefficient on the other. I believe, sir, such security is provided in this Constitution. If not, no consideration shall induce me to give my voice in its favor. For the people are secured by the following circumstances. First, all the offices in Congress are elective, not hereditary. The president and senators are to be chosen by the interposition of the legislatures of the several states, who are the representatives and guardians of the people, whose honor and interest will lead them, in all human probability, to have good men placed in the general government.
So just a quick interruption. That's blue because it is specific with the Electoral College.
Correct.
That is all talking about how we're guarded by the election process, to where we're not to elect directly. We elect directly our legislators locally and our representative in the House of Representatives, but that's it. And then They are to basically make sure how the electors are to be chosen and so forth. So keep on going.
Okay. Second, the representatives in Congress are to be chosen every second year by the people of the several states. Consequently, it lies with the people themselves to say who shall represent them. It will then be their own fault if they do not choose the best men in the Commonwealth. Who are Congress then? They are ourselves, the men of our own choice, in whom we can confide, whose interest is inseparably connected with our own. Why is it then the gentlemen speak of Congress as some foreign body, as a set of men who will seek every opportunity to enslave us? Such insinuations are repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution. But a worthy gentleman from Middleborough has told us that, though they may be good men when chosen, they may become corrupt. They may so, nor is it in the power of angels or men to prevent it. But should this be the case, the Constitution has made provisions for such an event. When it happens, we shall know what method to adopt in order to bring them to punishment. In all governments where offices are elective, there ever has been, and there ever will be, a competition of interests. They who are in office wish to keep in, and they who are out, to get in. The probable consequences of which will be that they who are already in place will be attentive to the rights of people, because they know that they are dependent on them for a future election, which can be secured by good behavior only. Besides, they who are out of office will watch them who are in with the most critical eye, in order to discover and expose their malconduct, if guilty of any, that so they may step into their places. Every gentleman knows the influence that a desire to obtain a place or the fear of losing it hath on mankind. Mr. Borg tells us that towards the close of the 7 years for which the representatives are chosen in the British Parliament, they become exceedingly polite to the people. Why? Because they know there is an approaching election pending. This competition of interest, therefore, between those persons who are in and those who are out of office will ever form one important check to the abuse of power in our representatives.
I'm going to just take a quick second to break in. We're out of time here. We're going into break. And this actually points to exactly how we need to start cultivating. So we'll get your comments when we come back after the break here. But this goes to the point, folks, of how we need to be cultivating, our fight back, as to, how we need to start bombarding everybody in office now for the upcoming election by using petitions, because now we don't have to wait until they start getting nice. We don't have to be nice. We can actually start attacking them. We do not have to wait till the election. We'll be right back.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so it was Providence that actually, when you were reading that, right before we had to go into break, that actually showed how, you know, we can actually take the upper hand. Because the way politicians have always worked, they only wait till right before their election or during the election time when they really listen to us and they want to talk to us. But if we start holding them accountable the day they step into office and we start bringing up their entire sordid past, we can begin a campaign now to actually unseat these guys. In other words, taking control of the narrative. But anyway... I digress, but I had to interrupt anyway because we were going into break. Like I said, the divine hand of providence gave us that. It gave me that interruption. So,
yeah, that's fine.
So here we go. Go ahead and kind of pick up where we left off.
So we're now at the third reason.
Yep.
Every 2 years, there will be a revolution in the general government in favor of the people. At the expiration of the first 2 years, there will be a new choice of representatives. At the expiration of the second 2 years, there will be a new choice of president and representatives. At the expiration of the third term, making 6 years from the commencement of Congress, there will be a new choice of senators and representatives. We all know, sir, that power thus frequently reverting to the people will prove a security to their liberties and a most important check to the power of the general government. Fourth, Congress can make no law that will oppress the people which will not equally involve themselves in the oppression. I imagine that means Congress should live the laws they make for the people. And they haven't been doing that.
So this is a qualification that clearly states that Congress can make no... This is a stipulation. In other words, this is a legally binding comment because these comments were used for them to accept this. So the state of Massachusetts, and I don't know if there's another state, but it doesn't matter. The state of Massachusetts actually created a stipulation that Congress can make no law that will oppress the people, which will not equally involve themselves in the oppression. Mm-hmm. So in other words, this becomes a definitive part of the Constitution that has to be added so that it becomes a part of the, you know, like I said, that definitive Constitution we need to create so that everybody understands when Congress does these types of things, they cannot, you know, immune themselves from them. So go ahead.
Awesome. What possible motive then can Congress have to abuse their power? Can any man suppose that they will be so lost to their own interest as to abuse their power, knowing at the same time that they equally involve themselves in the difficulty? It is a most improbable supposition. This would be like a man's cutting off his nose to spite his face. I place this, sir, among the securities of the liberties of my fellow citizens and rejoice in it. Somehow they've gotten around that, but we'll get to that at some point. Fifth, Congress guarantee to every state in the Union a Republican form of government. and engaged to protect them against all foreign and domestic enemies. That is, as it hath been justly observed by the Honorable Gentleman, Mr. Adams, near me, of known and tried abilities as a politician, each state shall choose such a Republican form of government as they please, and Congress solemnly engage themselves to protect it from every kind of violence, whether of faction at home or enemies abroad. This is an admirable security of the people at large, as well as of the several governments of the states. Consequently, the general government cannot swallow up the local government, as some gentlemen have suggested. Their existence is dependent on each other and must stand or fall together. Should Congress ever attempt the destruction of the particular legislatures, they would be in the same predicament with Samson, who overthrew the house in which the Philistines were making sport at his expense. Them he killed indeed, but he buried himself in the ruins. Sixth, another check in favor of the people is this, that the Constitution provides for the impeachment, trial, or punishment of every officer in Congress who shall be guilty of malconduct. With such a prospect, who will dare to abuse the powers vested in him by the people?
I'll interrupt right there. That obviously, when they took control of their own decorum and be able to punish themselves, and had, in other words, the chickens were guarding their hen house, and they actually became corrupt. This only proved the necessity of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So we no longer had to, you know, we no longer had to impeach them. They were to be removed. In other words, they had control over whether they were going to impeach each other or not. And they never do.
Right.
Go ahead.
Seven. Having thus considered several of the checks to the powers of Congress, which are interwoven with the Constitution, we will now suppose the worst that can take place in consequence of its adoption. I mean, that it shall be found in some of its parts oppressive to the people. Still, we have this dernier resort. I've never heard that term before. It looks French. It may be amended. It is not, like the laws of the Medes and Persians, immutable. The fifth article provides for amendments. It has been said it will be difficult after its ratification to procure any alterations. By no means, sir, for this weighty reason. It is a general government, and as such, will have a general influence. All states of the Union in the Union will feel the difficulty, and feeling it, will readily concur in adopting the method provided by the Constitution. And having once made the trial, experience will teach us what amendments are necessary. Viewing the Constitution in this light, I stand ready to give my vote for it without any amendments at all. Yet, if the amendments proposed by Your Excellency will tend to conciliation, I readily admit them, not as a condition of acceptance, but as a matter of recommendation only, knowing that blessed are the peacemakers. I am ready, sir, to submit my life, my liberty, my family, my property, and as far as my vote will go, the interests of my constituents to this general government. After all, if this Constitution was as perfect as the sacred volume is, it would not secure the liberties of the people unless they watch their own liberties. Nothing written on paper will do this. It is therefore necessary that the people should keep a watchful, not an overjealous, eye on their rulers, and that they should give all due encouragement to our colleagues, schools of learning, etc., so that knowledge may be diffused through every part of our country. Ignorance and slavery, knowledge and freedom are inseparably connected. While Americans remain in their present enlightened condition and warmly attached to the cause of liberty, they cannot be enslaved. Should the general government become so lost to all sense of honor and the freedom of the people as to attempt to enslave them, they who are the descendants of a race of men who have dethroned kings would make an American Congress tremble. Strip them of their public honors and reduce them to the lowest state of degradation.
That last comment is really, they who are the descendants of a race of men who have dethroned kings, He's talking about America because, you know, with basically King John and others, the people have uprisen and basically, you know, have seized the control when necessary. And that is the uniqueness of all of the people that migrated to America. But you got to look at it this way. Those people who were escaping the king of Britain, saying, oh, we don't have to live there, all the sycophants who left actually just created this huge vacuum of resistance, or I should say the dispersion of all the resistance that came to America, you know, only strengthened, you know, the power in Britain. Does that make sense?
I didn't see that coming. So I'm not sure.
Okay, so when the king, because the king became very tyrannical, and right. You know, the monarchy became so bad, because the British Revolution was during the late 1600s, and at that point in time, you know, the Americas had colonies, but they weren't really heavily populated. The migration of people that really started coming to America really started kicking in at that point in time. Afterwards, because those people who, you know, started recognizing that the king, you know, had started walking away from those Bill of Rights, because by the time John Adams and Thomas Jefferson walked through the streets, he noticed that these people were just, you know, sycophants. They were basically lapdogs for the crown, saying, how come you're not rising up against all the tyranny? Look at the freedoms you've lost. Are you not Englishmen? You know, when this happened while they were in Britain working on the treaty, you know, to end the war. And so they had come all that way to, you know, actually. And why? Because all of the people that said, I'm not going to put up with this, voted with their feet and migrated to America.
Right.
It took a century from the British Revolution, or I should say from the British Glorious Revolution that gave them the Bill of Rights. It took a century, you know, for that tyranny to come full circle. But at this point in time, America was looking better and better. There were great opportunities for both religious worship, you know, for commercial worship. And those people that didn't like the tyranny of the crown that was being controlled in their mercantile system, you know, we were given and we created in this nation a free market, and we have adopted what we would call a mercantile system. So because the government controls all of this, but I digress. Let's keep to what I said and let's move forward. We just got two little parts to go through. The recommended amendments is what they have. And then the analysis of the ratification is something I wanted to go through. So the recommended amendments are actually short. We should be able to get right through these.
Okay. First, that it be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly delegated by the aforesaid Constitution are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised. Secondly, that there shall be one representative to every 30,000 persons according to the census mentioned in the Constitution until the whole number of representatives amounts to 200. Thirdly, the Congress do not exercise the powers vested in them by the fourth section of the first article, but in cases where a state shall neglect or refuse to make the regulations therein mentioned, or shall make regulations subversive to the rights of the people, to free and equal representation of Congress agreeably to the Constitution. Fourthly, that Congress do not lay direct taxes, but when the monies arising from the impost and excise are insufficient for the public exigencies, nor then until Congress shall have first made a requisition upon the states to assess, levy, and pay their respective proportion of such requisitions agreeable to the census fixed in the said Constitution in such way and manner as the legislatures of the states shall think best. And in such case, if any state shall neglect or refuse to pay its proportion pursuant to such requisition, then Congress may assess and levy such state's proportion together with interest thereon at the rate of 6% per annum from the time of payment prescribed in such requisitions. Fifthly, the Congress erect no company with excessive advantages of commerce. Sixthly, that no person shall be tried for any crime by which he may incur an infamous punishment or loss of life until he be first indicted by a grand jury, except in such cases and as may arise in the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. Seventhly, the Supreme Judicial Federal Court shall have no jurisdiction of causes between citizens of different states, unless the matter of dispute, whether concerned of realty or personality, be of the value of $3,000 at the least. Nor shall the federal judicial powers extend to any action between citizens of different states with a matter in dispute, whether concern of the realty or personality, is not of the value of $1,500 at the least. Eighthly, in civil actions between citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in actions in common law shall be tried by jury if the parties or either of them request it. Ninthly, Congress shall at no time consent that any person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall accept of a title of nobility or any other office, any other title or office from any king, prince, or foreign state.
So interestingly enough, that's all that I see that as just a redundancy of what was in Article. Is it Article 1 or is it an Article? Yeah, it's in Article 1. And I want to say it is, maybe it's in Article 4. I think it is Article 4. The nobility clause that was already embedded in the Constitution, which made the 13th Amendment a little bit duplicative, and that they wanted to add this as the amendment here. Anyway, here we go. So one of the things that I, you know, because you probably got a lot of stuff and we've got 11, 12 minutes and we are almost done. I'm going to get into the analysis. But before we do move forward, you know, you'll notice that there's these little amendments. And one that actually stood out that probably stood out in your eye was that Congress erect no company with exclusive advantage of commerce.
Now, it did stand out.
So but here's the thing. Did the Constitution enumerate that power in Article 1 that they had any power over commerce regarding corporations or any companies or anything like that? No, they were not given that power. So why would they create that as an amendment? Because technically, the way that the progressives have been able to exploit, you know, and expand, you know, their reach is by some of the amendments themselves. Oh, well, we can start manipulating and redefining privacy. We, you know, this is how abortion became legal, is because they said, oh, well, because it's a, no, it, the Bill of Rights were strict declaratory restrictions, not amendable. In other words, if you want to change something, you cannot make no law, so you actually then have to amend that so that then you add that self to where you can make a law about that. But instead, they just went ahead and used the Bill of Rights where they, you know, they couldn't even be involved in it. They were not supposed to be involved in any way, any of these issues, like privacy. And they, oh, well, we have jurisdiction. And the court is how, that's how they use the court to backdoor us. And, you know, the danger of the Bill of Rights was really real. The importance of the Bill of Rights became apparent with the Civil War and at the post-Civil War, where it was proven that the states themselves were bad actors. And then after that, now the federal government could start, you know, kind of exploiting this. Now, one of the things I wanted to point out, because what I did in this particular ratification debate is, you notice you click on and go to the analysis of the ratification. Here are the numbers below, because there are 13 counties. If you go through them, there is a total of 13 counties. And so what I did was I identified how the counties had voted. And was there a ratification by county as well? Yes, there was. Because when you look at it, I highlight with the green that these counties, the green counties, actually ratified the Constitution. Instead of using a popular vote, which was their mistake back then, they actually should have broke their county down. But at that point in time, the states weren't broken down that way. In other words, they didn't have the epiphany that they needed to actually create a general government of the state where it was limited, and that the constitutions would be created at the county level, then giving a limited constitution, limited and defined constitution, to the state, like the states did to the federal government. And in so doing, we would have protected the political energies to ensure that population centers couldn't run away with controlling the state, and democracy couldn't destroy our liberties, which is exactly how we've gotten into this position. And so clearly you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 out of the 13. So 5 voted against, 8 voted for, boom, it was a slam dunk. They ratified it by, you know, that overwhelming, or that, you know, that cited majority. And I, you know, I started going, well, I'm going to have to do this to all of the ones that ratified it. And we'll see those who rubber stamped it. It was kind of interesting. But the interesting point is that they actually kept track of how each county voted. I mean, clearly, as you go through the voting, that's exactly what they did. They did a roll call of the county. You vote for yay or nay, yay, nay. And they documented that detail. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
It is very interesting. It's a Republican form of government, and counties mattered.
Yes.
By the way, speaking of counties mattering, how close are you to finishing your article?
I haven't even got back to it. I mean, I sent that out on Friday and then family time. So,
okay.
Or actually Thursday night, and I just had to catch up on a lot of other stuff. And I hope to get back to it, but we'll talk offline. But
okay.
There's a lot of things just going on over the next couple of weeks that, you know, we're just going to be taking up a lot of my time. So anyway, so with that, I think we have time to kind of go back into it, and we can actually, if you want to, on Tuesday next week, we can really dive into, you know, the go backs and talk about the Massachusetts ratification base, because it does have a very unique look. Now, Virginia is another state that has a very unique look, because, I mean, Was it five? Let me see. Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe. 4 of the first 5 presidents were from Virginia, and 1 was from Massachusetts. Actually, if you go with the first 6 presidents, it was 2 and 1, because John Quincy Adams was from Massachusetts. So, you know, Virginia really was a large leader of the nation. If you look at some of the greatest works, not that they all came from Virginia, but Virginia was a powerhouse of political thought. Mm-hmm. Now, each state had, you know, Roger Sherman, the Taylor of Caroline. They're all, and I'm not sure if Taylor of Caroline was from Virginia or North Carolina, but anyway, they all had great minds, and how they all, Rufus King, you know, and these are different states. I think Rufus King was Massachusetts. Wilson was a huge contributor out of Pennsylvania. But again, I go back to Virginia just seemed to have, you know, if it was like Super Bowl or Stanley Cup or something like that, they would have just been dominating. And they did. They dominated in the political arena for the first almost half century.
Right.
Right. So anyway, you want to get back into I think it was the delegated powers where he talked about no, it was not that. I think it was up in the religious tests, maybe, where we started. I think it was the delegated powers where they talked about slavery and those issues. Or do you want to wait? Do you want to wait till Tuesday?
How much time do we have? I want to read this.
4.5 minutes. Notes. We got 4.5 minutes.
Okay.
All right. So. Just so everybody knows, let me pull up where we're going next, because I kind of want to follow the sequence of, you know, who ratified next after Massachusetts that actually debated. And so we've covered Massachusetts. So the next one will be South Carolina. So we'll be diving into the South Carolina ratification debates on Tuesday, Wednesday next week. And then we'll do Virginia. Then we'll do New York, and then we'll do North Carolina. And actually, it's my opinion that we should do North Carolina, then New York, because New York is, I submit, it's one of the longest debates. And the reason it was so long is if you really look at Hamilton, and when Hamilton went into some of his discourses, he went off into the outer sphere of you know, where nothing can survive, you know, with lack of oxygen, in theory of politics and so forth, where you're going, who's he talking to? And what the heck, you know, how is this pertinent to what we're talking about?
Well, I think the other thing that's important about New York is that the Federalist Papers were designed as a to influence the people of New York. It's that was the audience. You know, people refer to the Federalist Papers a lot. I've learned a lot coming to the ratification debates, but I don't think anyone really understands that that was kind of a broad view of the Constitution for a limited audience.
Well, so actually, if you do a search on the papers that ran the Federalist Papers, you'll find, because the Federalist Papers went all the way up until, and Hamilton was the one that did the last of them because of New York, because New York hadn't ratified. But they started actually publishing these things. I'll have to open up my Federalist Papers, but I believe when we look at the Federalist Papers themselves, they actually were trying to stir up and help people, you know, get to the point of just ratifying this. And they tried to make it a slam dunk, and they didn't expect that there was going to be, because it was organized with John Jay, you first got involved, and then what ended up happening, it was Madison and Jefferson who actually really started bringing the, you know, bringing up the rear, because Jay only did like one or two. And I'm trying to remember, do I have the dates of these things on these? And so I don't. You have to go to the, if you go to the Avalon Project, because I just pulled up my Federalist Papers, the Avalon Project actually has the dates of the Federalist Papers.
Okay.
And supposedly, because they were never identified who, it was always Publius. And so the Avalon Projects, in some cases, didn't know, or they just said, well, it's not overwhelming, which is why they kind of lent more to Hamilton than Madison. But the Constitution Society, when you go to theirs, I believe they're far more accurate in identifying who was the author of those. But the Anti-Federalists were, you know, it was the unknown. They didn't even see that. So many papers didn't run the Anti-Federalists, but most of the papers ran the Federalist Papers throughout the different states, Connecticut and so forth. And you're right. Hamilton really did the bulk of them. That was because he was in New York, and Madison had to leave early so he could get all the way down to be a part of the election and be a part of the debates in Virginia. And right. So Hamilton was stalling. Hamilton was buying time. We're out of time ourselves. So, folks, Paul, thank you for being here. And, folks, we're going to be going, but in our next show, we'll be doing Feedback Friday. Then we'll have the Game Changer special episode on Monday. But on Tuesday, we'll have Paul back, and we will, you know, Paul will become prepared with all of his questions regarding the things that were invoking great thought and great content. And so regarding the Massachusetts debates, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.